The next case is 04-1771, State of Ohio versus Jason Quinones. Ms. Williamson.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please. May it please the court, my name is Lisa Williamson, representing the State of Ohio and County Prosecutor Bill Mason, appellant in the State of Ohio versus Quinones. We respectfully ask this court to reverse the decision of the 8th District Court of Appeals and uphold Ohio's felony sentencing procedures as constitutional under Blakely, as well as Apprendi and Booker. Very quickly, Quinones pled guilty to 3 different felonies of the fourth degree, unlawful sexual conduct with a minor involving 3 different children. He pled guilty to 1 count of rape, a felony of the first degree involving one of those children. The minor was under 13. He received the maximum sentence of 10 years for the felony one, the maximum for the felony fours. The court ran one of the rapes and one of the sexual conduct counts consecutively, and by virtue of his maximum sentences, he also received more than the minimum sentence because he had not ever been sentenced to prison. He had not served a prison term. I don't believe that Ohio has a Blakely problem, and I'll present that to you in 2 basic arguments this morning. The first is that Ohio's sentencing statutes do not involve the type of facts that Apprendi and Blakely and Booker determined must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury. While it's true that Apprendi and Ring tell us that it's immaterial how a state labels a sentence-enhancing fact, it is absolutely material to differentiate between the sentence-enhancing facts and the subjective considerations that the United States Supreme Court has always allowed judges to make. The second point that I'd like to make is that 2929.14 A and C, with respect to maximum sentences in this case, do not allow a trial court to sentence beyond the statutory maximum. For that matter, neither do the consecutive or more than the minimum. This satisfies the Sixth Amendment because the Booker Court specifically held that when a trial judge exercises his discretion to select within a specific range, a defendant has no right to have a jury determine the facts that that judge deems relevant to his sentence. I think it's important to note that all Ohio appellate jurisdictions have upheld Ohio sentencing under the maximum, and the First District Court of Appeals will do that if it involves a prior conviction. Regarding the findings that are made by Ohio courts, by Ohio judges, these are in fact not findings of fact. The court is simply guided by the factors in 29.29.12 and 13 to choose a sentence that supports the principles of felony sentencing under 29.29.11 to protect the public and to punish the offender. This truly is not semantics.
Counsel, are you saying that 29.29.12 and 29.13 are already guidelines, aspirational, not in line then with the reconfiguration by the United States Supreme Court of Blakely?
29.29.12 says the court shall consider. Yes, that's a non-exhaustive list. And as Ken pointed out, 29.29.13, if the court does not find one of those factors and finds that the defendant is amenable to community control sanctions, it's clearly within the court's discretion to either impose a prison sentence or impose community control sanctions.
Would you agree, though, that we're talking about 4 potentially problem areas, more than the minimum, maximum, consecutive, or the guidance, the overriding the guidance for community control?
Yes.
I mean, arguably, that's where our problems lie, if we have problems.
If we have problems, that's where it would be. However, I don't think that there are any problems under the factors that the court must consider under 12 or 13.
Although we don't have a situation where the judge can automatically make this determination. The way the statute is written now, the judge shall make these findings on the record, and we have a history of our case law going back to Comer, Jordan, Edmondson, those cases that have interpreted this language is saying that the judge shall make the findings before imposing those types of sentences. So the argument of is this an elemental finding or is it not, I think really is beyond the point, because we're talking about what can the judge do just based on the jury verdict without anything more. What can the judge do in the sentencing? And if you're talking about those problem areas, the judge needs to make the findings before the judge can act. And that's where we get into the difficulty.
Well, I believe 29.29.12 says that the court shall consider, but the findings are to support the goals of felony sentencing.
I'm talking about consecutives, maximum, more than the minimum. The situations where we have said, this court has said, you need to make these findings on the record. If they're not on the record, we're going to send it back for resentencing. We have at least 200 cases in the state that have been sent back because the judge did not make a finding on the record orally, not even in the judgment entry, but orally.
Yeah, and in fact, that's my point. The facts that the court considers, the findings the court makes, are those that the United States Supreme Court has said that courts can make. And the second point is that as long as the court sentences then within a statutorily authorized range, there is no Blakely, Apprendi, or Booker problem.
Can we look at it in terms of a distinction between shall make these findings? The purpose of that language is to put something on the record so that the public, the victim, the defendant, and the court of appeals knows what it is. But the ability to make those decisions that you shall make them on the record, the ability to make those decisions is still a discretionary call with the judge.
That is,
it's not saying the judge has to make those findings. It says if you find any of these things, you have to make a record so that there is protection for all the parties involved and there's an appellate review possible. Is there, maybe we're confusing apples and oranges in shall make a finding being mandatory on the judge to make the finding versus to make a record of the finding.
That certainly is a better way of saying what I attempted to say. Yes, absolutely. In fact, as far back as 1949, the United States Supreme Court said that courts can look at the facts that are presented to it within a pre-sentence report, and those contain a lot of things that relate to the offense, the offender, his family, etc. The 10th District earlier this year in State versus Abdul-Mumin actually set forth a lot of the Supreme Court precedent that's germane to this, to exactly your point, Justice. The first was Jones versus United States. Juries don't have to find every fact that has some bearing on sentencing. In 98, Almendez-Torres versus U.S., recidivism is a basis for increasing sentence. Castillo versus U.S. in 2000, traditional sentencing factors include the characteristics of the offender, like recidivism. Harris in 2002, seriousness and recidivism factors have been the traditional domain of judges. They have not been alleged in an indictment nor proven beyond a reasonable doubt to juries. Apprendi, Blakely, and Booker do nothing to overrule any of these decisions. The findings that are made by the trial court are then not the prohibited functional elements, but in fact are subjective considerations. Call them conclusions, call them value judgments, whatever you'd like to, they simply are not the same. Our considerations are not the same as the mens rea, as in Apprendi, the purpose to intimidate a protected class with a firearm, or acting in a particular manner like the deliberate cruelty in Blakely. These are not the facts, as in Ring versus Arizona, that elevated a life sentence to a death sentence, that one is a principal planner of a robbery, or one is the shooter in a murder.
Counsel, you're here as the appellant. What in your case caused the Court of Appeals to determine the sentence needed to be revisited?
Actually, in this case, it was a very strange decision. They did not admit that Blakely applied. They remanded the case to the trial court for consideration of Blakely. They did not make a decision about whether or not a Blakely applied. And I'm suggesting to you that that decision was wrongly decided, that they should have made a determination that Blakely had absolutely no application to either more than the minimum, consecutive, or maximum sentences. And that's what I'm asking the court to decide today.
And your contention is that there's nothing in our sentencing scheme that offends Blakely?
No. In fact, as I just pointed out, the seriousness and recidivism factors have...
I realize there are a number of things that intuitively we could reasonably conclude should and are appropriately in the hands of a judge. And beyond our intuition, when we look at Apprendi, Blakely, Booker, and Fanfan, would also conclude that the Supreme Court has not, in any kind of practical application, said those things should not be the province and appropriately decided by a judge. But the language of Justice Scalia and Blakely, and then revisited in Booker, is very precise. And you're confident, you've looked at our, I assume you haven't had occasion in preparation of your case, which is factually limited, to examine the entire sentencing scheme and the role of the judge to determine that there are no offenses, no Blakely offenses, found anywhere in the Ohio Revised Code.
That's correct, sir.
You've done that analysis?
With
or have not?
In general, in 29, 29, 12, 13, 19, 14, yes, I don't think that any of those sections.
So in preparing for your case here today, you went through all of the sentencing scheme, not just as it applies to your client?
Oh, no, as applies to this client.
Okay.
Yes. Well, as applies to...
I mean, but we have a larger...
Jonas.
We're using these cases to deal with a larger problem, not just your clients.
Understandably, yes,
or
of course.
In your case, not your client, but the person that you were prosecuting.
Yes.
So have you tried to do that broad look, or have you focused principally on your case?
No, I truly have focused on the issues that this court accepted under its jurisdiction. That's what I have focused on, sir.
Okay.
May I ask a different question? Blakely addressed a finding that was made of deliberate cruelty. Now, how would you compare that finding that was made in that case with Ohio's finding about the worst form of the offense? Do you see those as parallel? Or what distinctions could you draw for me with respect to those two?
I think the deliberate cruelty was something that the court said was with a specific purpose. Purpose is something that Ohio sentencing statutes have generally contained. Our legislature specifically states when someone acts with a particular purpose, and that comparison has been made in that case. So with respect to worst form of the offense, what the court is looking at is not whether or not someone acted with a particular purpose, but whether or not the factors suggest that this may be a very egregious situation. And those are simply factors that the court considers in establishing that this particular offender must be going to prison because that would fulfill the goals of felony sentencing under 29-29-11.
So you see those two factors as one going to purpose and one going to a different set of value considerations?
Absolutely, yes. The court is just considering the seriousness and the recidivism factors in order to support its sentence and fulfill its goals to fulfill the principles of felony sentencing.
What about the argument that we're hearing that any time the court imposes more than the minimum sentence and chooses to put more, then we get into a Blakely issue because although it's not a maximum sentence, Ohio would require a minimum sentence for a first offender, for example.
As long as that sentence stayed within the statutorily authorized range, it's not a problem. Those were the two issues that were brought up in each of these cases. The facts, they were either element or element-like facts, as Justice Moyer pointed out. The amount of drugs, that's easy. we can tell that. The other things that aren't so easy are the subjective things. The United States Supreme Court says that's okay. These cases also point out that as long as you stay within the statutorily authorized range, you're okay. So that, I hope, answers that.
But
the statutory authorized range has a different definition now. And arguably, it is reset in the more than the minimum situation, because it's what could the judge do without making an additional finding? And if we're talking about more than the minimum, we're not talking about the statutory range as it was earlier thought of.
As long as those findings are based on the type of facts that Blakely and Apprendi and Booker don't proscribe, the finding is not the problem.
So the heart of your argument really is that you're making this distinction between facts as elements and facts for sentencing enhancing purposes, the value judgments.
Absolutely.
If we accept that, we could follow your argument. If we can't accept that, then, of course, you have the opposite conclusion.
That is correct.
I'm having some difficulty in finding consistency between your argument here and the fact that we do permit jurors in death cases to consider all kinds of psychological information or information testimony from experts regarding the psychological condition, the mental condition of the defendant. Jurors consider all of that, and they make a recommendation to the judge regarding the sentence. How are the issues of recidivism any different for a juror than the kinds of issues that we permit jurors to make or consider in death cases?
Well, I think we've always treated death cases differently, for good reason. Secondly, the facts are clearly at issue in the mitigation phase of a death case, and the jurors are deciding which facts may be germane to punishment. That's how I would draw the distinction.
Do you believe that that the system could function as under Blakely, if we decide Blakely applies, without a bifurcated process? In other words, could all the information regarding sentencing be given to the jury during what we would call the guilt phase of the trial? Or do you think, as I think it's Kansas, some state has decided that bifurcation is necessary? Do you have an opinion on that?
I don't quite see how it would work. There are many things that we can't get into the guilt phase of a trial that we do get in the penalty phase, and I don't see that you would allow us to do that in a combined system. I have to think that it would have to be in a bifurcated system for that reason.
Counsel, let me bother you with something you've read over and over out of the Blakely decision, and this is where Justice Scalia is discussing and trying to knock down the dissenting colleagues' arguments that Blakely's holding is just going to open a parade of horribles. Says an evaluation of Apprendi's fairness to criminal defendants must compare it with the regime it replaced, in which a defendant with no warning in either his indictment or plea would routinely see his maximum potential sentence balloon from as little as 5 years to as much as life imprisonment. See, he cites the U.S. Code, based not on facts proved to his peers beyond a reasonable doubt, but on facts extracted after a trial from a report compiled by a probation officer who the judge thinks more likely got it right than wrong. We can conceive of no measure of fairness that would find more fault in the utterly speculative bargaining effects, Justice Breyer identifies, than in the regime he champions. Suffice it to say that if a measure exists, it is not one found by the framers, not one found that the framers left us with. Now, he's talking about a real practical problem that an employee of the state does a pre-sentencing report that is furnished to the judge and may weigh heavily on what the judge decides the appropriate sentence should be. Discretion or no discretion in terms of, you know, the various state schemes. But that's the reality of the way the system works, and invariably in those reports are facts that are reported to the judge that were not made available to the jury, and they may bear very heavily and probably should, but they may not always be accurate or right.
Absolutely, that is true. And I think a responsible sentencing judge will then talk with the defendant, defendant's counsel, any witnesses who are present at the sentencing hearing to determine which of those the court finds persuasive. Absolutely, Judge.
But there, in that context, I mean, he's pointing now to findings of fact. I mean, the judge is accepting those facts and making a finding, really.
And the U.S. Supreme Court has said that's okay. They're, if they regard recidivism and seriousness factors, they do.
But there are frequently other things, like other criminal activity in there.
Sure, that has to go, that relates specifically
to. For which there has been no conviction.
Possibly there usually is other arrests in there and things like that. Yes, absolutely. And again, a responsible court should take the time to verify which of those are true, to be very honest with you, before they are considered. It may very well be that is persuasive to the court's decision that a person is more likely to reoffend because of arrests, if they are in fact true. However, the responsible court should take the time to verify those to make sure they are in fact correct.
Thank you, Ms. Williamson.
Thank you.
Mr. Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, my name is Michael Fisher. I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Jason Quinones. The relief that is sought by Jason Quinones in this case is the affirmation of the 8th District opinion to remand this to the trial court for resentencing with application of Blakely. So yes, Appley feels that Blakely should apply to the sentencing statutes in Ohio. The facts of the Quinones case are directly on point, are strikingly similar with the facts in the Blakely case. In Blakely, he pled guilty to a sexually related offense and for it was facing a range of 49 to 53 months. That was elevated with a finding of deliberate cruelty. In the case at hand, we have a young man, 21 years old, who was engaged in sexual conduct with a 15-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 12-year-old, with no prior criminal record, had never served a prison sentence before, had never been found guilty of a crime before. This judge imposed more than the minimum. In fact, she imposed the maximum consecutive. And she did so by making findings. So she exceeded the minimum. She exceeded the standard range in this case. Now, in Blakely, the standard range was 49 to 53 months. A Washington state judge can make any finding between 49 and 53 months. That's their standard range. In Ohio, the standard range is the minimum. And it's the minimum because of the statutory Senate Bill 2 requirement upon the court that, you know, absent findings, standard range is the minimum.
To accept your position, we have to say Ohio doesn't allow a sentencing range. Ohio only allows the minimum, and everything that is in the must shall make these findings are equivalent to the deliberate cruelty category that Blakely found. That's your position.
I think it is, and it is,
and
because
the prosecutor's position is, no, that's a range, and all those findings, while they have to be on the record, are discretionary at the court. Am I summarizing those two positions correctly?
I believe you are, and I say so, and I feel that way, because Justice Scalia in Blakely said that you cannot impose a sentence greater than that would be found by the verdict of a jury or a plea absent additional findings. You cannot impose a greater sentence.
So your position is the rape of a 12-year-old requires the minimum sentence, and that you cannot put consecutive sentences in when you rape three different children.
Absent,
that's your position.
Absent additional findings, and I feel that—
What additional findings would enhance that?
Well, pursuant to Blakely, the additional findings would have to be made either by a plea or stipulation by the defendant or by a jury. I know that this court in Griffin has said that a jury cannot make these decisions because there's no provision in the statute. But that doesn't mean that the Ohio legislature can't go back and add a jury ability to make sentencing findings, and that's what they should do.
Does Blakely apply to consecutive sentencing? Or is this a stretch
Absolutely
that you want us to make?
Absolutely, it applies to consecutive sentencing.
Does it reference consecutive?
It does not, but here's why. Because Blakely and Apprendi and Ring all deal with punishment. And they say you cannot increase someone's punishment by making findings above and beyond what a jury or a plea has led you to.
So we'd have to stretch Blakely into the consecutive area.
Absolutely.
In this case...
Findings for a consecutive sentence that a harm was so great or unusual that a single term does not adequately reflect seriousness of the conduct is an evaluation of the case. It's an evaluation of the facts. Just as in Blakely when they found deliberate cruelty, just as in my case when she found severe psychological harm caused by my client. That's why the judge in Quinones gave him more than the minimum, gave him the maximum consecutive on a first offense, because she found there was severe psychological harm to the victim.
There was no evidence. Are you stating that in order to comply with Blakely, that the jury or the defendant, and when a jury is waived, has to make those statements? In this case, this defendant, Quinones, would have to make certain statements that would lead the judge to find this more serious crime, the worst crime?
Well, I think that Blakely stands for the proposition that either a jury has to find it or it has to be stipulated to.
Stipulated by the defendant,
yes,
would be the one that would have to make those,
yes,
statements for the judge to make the findings. Is that correct?
Or the findings.
That would not be unusual, Your Honor. In Ohio, there is recent case law that stipulations on consecutive sentences are acceptable. This court has found so. I feel that the any finding by a trial court that enhances beyond what the legislature has told us is the statutory standard range, anything beyond that must be found by a jury or stipulated to. Oh. And, Your Honor, by leave of court, I would ask that
is that
amicus
finding
be allowed to...
Here's a question. Okay, go ahead.
Your Honor, I would ask that by leave of court, the amicus be allowed to speak in the remainder of my time as granted by court.
We have a few questions.
Yes.
Go ahead, Justice.
You want to continue to answer questions of the court?
Yes.
Be smart
Mrs.
to do Slanzinger, that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, or the findings do not have to be made at all. I mean, it's an alternative. When we talk about remedy, if we find a problem, if we say the findings are not required, then the judge has full discretion to make this determination.
That, I think, would be unfortunate for Ohio, and I think that it could be called a bookerization or bookerizing of Ohio, mm-hmm, and that would lead us back to pre-Senate Bill 2. That would take us back to a time when there are no rules.
Well, pre-Senate Bill 2, though, there were a lot of things that were helpful to the defense. One very basic thing was the compression of the ranges. A felony one now is 3 to 10 years, the basic range. Before, we were talking about potentially 25 and so on.
I think that you can essentially look at Senate Bill 2 as a three-legged stool or three-legged chair. It has a leg for presumptions, it has a leg for findings, and it has a leg for appellate review, meaningful appellate review. If you bookerize Ohio and you take away the presumptions and you take away the findings that would be found by a jury or pled to, there is no meaningful appellate review. That chair will fall over.
Then you talk about the discretion of the judge and the reasonableness and abuse of discretion.
The judge has the discretion within the upper range once those initial findings are made by a jury or are pled to. Then we have the upper range of a 3 to 10 beyond the minimum once a jury finds those findings.
Are those made in a guilt phase or a separate sentencing phase?
I would think a bifurcation would be the most appropriate way to do it.
Counsel.
How do we have authority to impose that?
The legislature can establish, just as they have established MDO specifications, RVO specifications.
Excuse me. What then is the ruling that you want this court to make in this case?
In this case, I want you to affirm the 8th District, remand this to the 8th District for resentencing, pass it down to the trial court for resentencing, where she will impose the minimum concurrent, because we cannot have a jury finding now, according to Griffin. So the court would be required to find the minimum concurrent sentence in this case.
Which means 11 and a half years goes down to what?
3 years.
Counsel, with respect to your specific case, you mentioned two kinds of findings here. There was a finding by the judge that the actions of your client caused severe mental stress, or what were the magic words?
The court made the finding that minimum would demean the seriousness of the offense because severe psychological harm was caused to the victims. That's page 53 of the transcript.
Right.
She decided that maximum was appropriate for the worst form of the offense because of severe psychological harm to the victim, page 56. And she decided that consecutive sentences were appropriate because there was severe psychological harm to the victim. But there was never any testimony or evidence taken at the sentencing hearing that there was severe psychological harm to the victim.
So that was also intertwined in the finding of consecutive?
Yes. The finding
was that finding necessary to run them consecutively?
The court had to find that the harm was so great or unusual that a single sentence would demean the seriousness of the offense. And then she went on to say that it was because of the severe psychological harm caused to the victims.
Because
the
severe psychological harm does sound like a determination of a fact that is very much like
Blakely. It absolutely
Blakely.
Is. It is absolutely a factual-based analysis of the case that should be done by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt.
It's not a fact or an element, though. You don't need to have severe psychological harm in order to show the rape of a 12, 13, and 15-year-old child.
No, I agree, Your Honor, but to elevate the sentence beyond the standard range, which is the minimum in this case, to elevate it beyond that requires additional findings, and the court made that finding that was factually based, that a defendant should have had notice of, that a defendant should have been able to present evidence of or against, and he did not have that opportunity.
Were there victim
Violation
statements
of
here?
Violation of the Sixth Amendment rights.
Counsel, were there victim statements here?
I don't recall. I was not the trial attorney. I don't recall.
So under your position, all sentences currently in Ohio will have to be reduced to non-consecutive concurrent minimum until the legislature acts?
Yes. Your Honor, may I have leave to have my amicus speak as well?
Thank you, Mr. Fisher.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Martin.
May it please
Counsel,
the court.
Counsel, is that your position as well, that you would say that the fix here, the solution, is as Justice Stratton just articulated?
Yes, Your Honor, it is until the General Assembly so acts. And the reason why this court, if I may just interrupt for 1 second, I would like Mr. Chief Justice to thank the court for the kindness of allowing the Amici to appear this morning for argument. Your Honor, back to your question. The reason why the minimum and concurrent terms of imprisonment should be the law in Ohio until there is a fix by the General Assembly is because to bookerize, to use the phrase we've been using this morning, would be violative of at least four principles. One, stare decisis. This court in State ex rel Mason versus Griffin unanimously held on December 1st of last year that if, in fact, the trial judge in that case were to find that Blakely applies, that the solution was to sentence without the enhancements. And this court was correct when it unanimously so found in State ex rel Mason versus Griffin, because for the second reason, to do otherwise is to engage in judicial legislation. It is to engage in the process which separation of powers tells us is best left to
but
the General Assembly.
That process has already been sanctioned by the U.S. Supreme Court as constitutional. Mm-hmm. So what do we do with that?
Your Honor, when faced with an unconstitutional statute, this court has several remedies. The remedy that has been urged by the state and its amici today has been to excise the presumptions. The problem with that is my third point, which is that it would pervert the sentencing statute, and it would not, in the end, be consistent with this court's jurisprudence with respect to excising portions of a statute. And the reason why is this. If this court removes the presumptions, it will be removing the standard sentence that the General Assembly has said is going to apply in most cases. That is the nature of the presumption. So the amputation here is not of a limb, it's of the heart of SB 2.
Well, it seems like you are trying to have your cake and eat it too. You want us to get rid of the whole sentencing scheme, but you want to keep the parts in it that you like. And you say to us, don't Bookerize, but we're constitutionally allowed to, but we shouldn't? Is that basically your position? We can, but we shouldn't?
Your Honor, I would submit to the court that it cannot, and this places a public defender in the unfortunate position of asking you to side with Justice Scalia as opposed to Justice Ginsburg. But with that in mind, the dissent in Booker talks about the fact that the court, the majority in Booker, the remedy majority in Booker, has really gone above and beyond the normal type of fix that a court would employ when faced with a statute that had constitutional problems.
Well, and there's nothing that says that Ohio has to adopt the U.S. Supreme Court's rule. I mean, the fact that it's constitutional doesn't mean we have to adopt it. We do a lot of things that different than what the U.S. Supreme Court says, but they're still constitutional. Nobody's made that point, but it seems to me obvious that we don't have to follow. If we want to keep this, as much of this, the reform, all this reform that was done in SB 2, that's our business, is it not? So long as we don't conflict with federal law.
It absolutely is. When the Supreme Court Bookerized the federal sentencing guidelines, it was not mandating a rule of constitutional law to be followed by the states. It was a federal court of last resort fixing a federal statute.
Well, and fundamental to their conclusion that they could do a fix was their interpretation that their fix left intact the broad purposes sought to be achieved by Congress in the legislation.
And
I take it your argument here is that corrective surgery on Senate Bill 2, you can't envision a way, perhaps we can, that could be done and still leave the guts of and the principle intent of the legislature and what they sought to achieve with that, with the overall sentencing scheme, intact.
That's absolutely correct. And Mr. Chief Justice, I see that my time has ended. I would ask the court for leave to continue.
You can continue a little longer.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's very kind. That's exactly the fact that if in Ohio we gut the presumptions, we have gutted the heart of this statute. And it's different than the situation that was facing the federal government. Because in the federal government, excising statutes so as to cause the guidelines to be advisory is going to end up with a practical effect of not really changing things for the majority of defendants. But in the state of Ohio, when you take out the presumptive sentence, then you've taken out the starting point. And that didn't happen when you Bookerized the federal guidelines.
Well, let me take you to, I believe, the chief's suggestion back on the prior case, and that is that there are a number of factors for a judge to consider at sentencing time under Senate Bill 2. A number of them could lead to an enhancement which don't require the determination of a fact that would seem to offend the Blakely rule. But others, there may be other facts, such as the facts in the case that you're here on, where the judge made a determination that the harm caused serious emotional or psychological damage to the victims. Now, that's the determination of a very precise fact that seems to fit within Blakely.
Your Honor, while there are facts in Ohio that are more precise than others, while there are facts in Ohio that are more normative, perhaps, than others.
Well, maybe the term we should use is facts versus factors. And there are some factors that get into the sentencing that would appear to be still left to judges, and that Blakely doesn't really try to overturn that or limit that.
No, Your Honor, Apprendi, Blakely, Booker applies to all of them. And the reason why is because that line of jurisprudence is not concerned with the what that is being decided. It is concerned with the who that will make the decision. And the who that will make the decision must be the jury. And so therefore we see in Booker that they go back in summarizing the whole line of cases, and they talk about the fact that every accusation essential to punishment must be proven by a jury.
So your view is that in the evaluation of someone who is likely to repeat the offense is not a candidate for rehabilitation immediately, those kinds of, you would call those facts that are to be decided by the jury post-Blakely?
Post-Blakely in Ohio, yes, because the General Assembly of Ohio has made those considerations essential to punishment. And the essence of Apprendi Blakely's line of cases is that which is essential to punishment must be subjected to the unanimous suffrage of the jury. Now, Your Honor, I want to go back to the fix for one very important point.
Very quickly.
And thank you, Your Honor. And this was brought up via Mr. Quinones' submission of supplemental authority when he submitted Weaver versus Graham to the court. One thing the court should remember is this. Even a Bookerized fix today will have ex post facto ramifications and would be an ex post facto violation if applied to anyone currently on, whose offense has occurred already or is currently on direct appeal and is awaiting, either awaiting trial or currently on direct appeal. And the reason why is this. In Weaver versus Graham, it was a case where the United States Supreme Court changed the rules for the computation of good time. And a unanimous United States Supreme Court said, when this defendant committed his offense, good time was calculated this way. And you cannot take that away from this defendant. Even though they didn't make the new calculation of good time retroactive in terms of the time the person had already been in prison, they just said, henceforth, you won't get the same amount of good time under the same considerations. And the Supreme Court said, no. He gets the same deal that he got before because that was the deal in place when he committed his offense. And when these clients that are in the Blakely pipeline right now in Ohio committed their offense, they enjoyed a presumption of minimum and concurrent. And
I understand your argument, Mr. Ryan. Let me ask you one different question now. It seems like you're talking past Ms. Williamson. Her position is, if I understand it correctly, is that a court in Ohio does not sentence beyond the maximum. And your favorite author in Blakely here talked about imposing a 90-month sentence beyond the 53-month maximum.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the position is that we don't even have an application of Blakely in Ohio because we're not beyond our maximum.
Your Honor, my friends are wrong. The reason why the state of Ohio is wrong is this. The maximum, Blakely tells us, is that which can be imposed on the basis of the jury's verdict alone. And the fact of the matter is, and we can go back at least as far as Edmondson and on through Comer, this court has recognized that if you fail to make the finding, then the sentence will not stand. And this court has gone so far as to say, you know, you came close to a finding in Edmondson, but you didn't quite make it. That's not good enough. And if this court were to say now that this set of sentencing guidelines is merely advisory, it would be reversing not only its own sets of precedents, but the precedents of every district court of appeals in the state of Ohio over the past 8 years.
Counsel,
yes, Your Honor.
In the prior case, I'm sure you were watching, there was an argument about waiver. I was having trouble getting that because that seems that argument is valid. Blakely waived.
Your Honor, two aspects to waiver, if I may. First of all, which cases, part of your waiver questioning, if I understood it correctly, was to ask which cases are going to be affected by what yes. you've got going on here. Booker answered that. Booker answered that at the very end of the majority opinion in Booker that was written by Justice Stevens, where the court said that pursuant to Griffith versus Kentucky, all cases currently on direct appeal are affected by the decision in Blakely. And that would be the same rule here for Ohio. That's federally constitutionally based. Now let's move to the question of waivers. All right. A waiver of a Sixth Amendment right, like the waiver of any fundamental constitutional right, is to be strictly construed against waiver. None of these defendants have said, at least in these cases that are before the court, that I'm giving up my right under Apprendi-Blakely or even before Blakely, I'm giving up my right under Apprendi-Ring to my Sixth Amendment rights with respect to sentencing. There has been no express waiver. That's number one. Number two, if this court were to hold that a plea of guilty is in and of itself a waiver, then I suggest to the court you will open up a real Pandora's box. Because what will happen then is this. If that becomes a waiver, then every plea colloquy in the state of Ohio during the past 3 or 4 years is constitutionally infirm because trial judges have not extracted that waiver during the course of the Rule 11 advisement. And therefore, we will have a situation where we'll have motions to withdraw guilty pleas running amok by virtue of the fact of the Blakely waiver issue. Finally,
you've used your time, Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Williamson, you've gone well over your time, but you may take 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. I will be brief. When we do have facts that elevate a sentence in Ohio, they are written into the sentencing statutes. When the facts elevate the sentence, for instance, robbery goes from felony 3 to a felony 2 if a person tries or does inflict physical harm or uses a deadly weapon. However, when there are conclusions made or value judgments made or weighed to support an appropriate sentence, recidivism and seriousness factors are appropriately considered. This is objective facts versus subjective considerations. And the Sixth Amendment does not require juries rather than judges to weigh the factors to decide an appropriate sentence. I'll conclude with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.